360 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is sort of a Phoenix Files episode, but also a spotlight on a creator-owned title that is from a creator who has been around comics for a really, really long time. It's Dan Panosian, and he's mostly known for his illustrations, his artwork. And this is really the first time he's gotten a chance to tell a story of his own. He wrote and illustrated a story called Slots. It was a 6-issue miniseries from Image Comics, and I thought it was great. It totally blew me away. The trade paperback comes out this week on the 13th. It gets my highest possible recommendation. Do yourself a favor. Go and pick it up. There's something about the story that I feel like just about everybody can relate to, a sense of trying to fit in and belong, redemption, destiny, you know, luck, all that kind of stuff. Like, is luck what you make it? Is destiny what you make it? Are you in charge of your own decisions? Plus, it's just a really cool character story with interesting, quirky characters. The story's compelling. You definitely want to see how it turns out. And I just loved it. I really did. It was so much fun as a story, and I'm sure this comes from years of illustrating sequential art from Dan, but again, I'm always impressed when a first-time writer has such a sense of pacing. It's really the hardest thing to get right. So again, I think Dan had a little bit of an edge because he has been a storyteller, but he's always been the one, you know, making the visual part of it, right? And now he's got a chance to do the scripting and dialogue as well. And he did a great job. The dialogue is real. It feels authentic to the characters. And there's plenty of, you know, funny lines. And again, the book was just really fun. And Dan himself, you know, I'd seen him at shows over the years here and there, but never had a chance to really sit down and chat and get to know him. He's a great guy. So it's always a pleasure when I get to meet a creator who is so genuine and so warm and so appreciative and of his fans and grateful for his career. It makes it that much easier to support those kind of people. So in myself, Dan has a fan and a friend for life. And again, Slots, it's absolutely incredible. Please, please, please go out and pick it up. It's worth your time. And hopefully the sales on the single issues and the trade will warrant a second volume, because I know Dan has a really, really cool idea for another story that I'd love to see in print, honestly. So as I said, do yourself a favor, check it out. Slots from Dan Panosian and Image Comics. And again, thanks to Dan for taking the time to sit down and talk to me at Phoenix Fan Fest. And I hope to see him again soon and have him back on the show. So thanks for listening, as always, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. All right, this is Jace. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. This is a special spotlight on a creator-owned book that I recently read, which absolutely blew me away. It was so much fun. It was a story that made me feel like this is why comics exist. It's about the marriage of telling a story, telling a narrative with sequential art. It's Slots by Dan Panosian, and I'm lucky enough to have Dan join me here on the podcast. So welcome to the podcast.
Face to face,
yeah. Here at Phoenix Comic Fest. So before we get into Slots specifically, let's talk a little bit about your history with comics. Did you grow up reading them?
I did. I mean, I was pretty young. My dad loved comic books, so he was a graphic artist. He had an advertising agency, and when he got older, but he was working like a madman style job as an art director at a company called Blake and Gabriel in Cleveland, Ohio. But he loved comics. He loved Daredevil. He had worked on an ad campaign with Neil Adams, so he knew who Neil was. And he would only bring in good-looking comic books to the house, like it was Joe Kubert comics or John Buscema, Neil Adams. And I remember he picked up one of Walt Simonson's very first works. And my dad must have liked that because of the graphic design sensibilities of Walt Simonson. So he's like, oh. So I got a really nice introduction. And then I kind of fell out of it. And then by the time I was 14, I had been drawing quite a bit. I was into Dungeons and Dragons. And there's a Marvel Comics book. There was a big oversized tryout book, and I did that and wrote to Marvel, and they gave me feedback at age 14. So I was like, I'm set. You know, this is what I'm going to do for a living. At age 14, I knew. And I think at that, even at age 14, I had done like some book for AC Comics, which featured Eric Larson, a young Eric Larson too. And I was penciled a few pages, and maybe even Eric inked one of them. I don't know. Someone else inked them. In my mind, it's Eric Larson, but I doubt it. But he was in the book.
Yeah. And so from that point, that just started your journey, right?
Like, yeah. It's just, I loved comic books in the medium, and really got into Frank Miller. Like everybody else did from that era of comics. It was John Byrne, whatever John Byrne was doing, whatever Walt Simonson was doing, and Frank Miller. Those were like the three.
And what was your dad's, like, how did he feel about you wanting to do this?
He didn't like the whole idea of me becoming an artist, because it's not an easy business.
Right.
You know, I mean, maybe for some people it is, but for most artists, it's, you know, you gotta keep at it, and you gotta hope you're in favor with the editors and, of course, the fans, more importantly.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit specifically about Slots. Why don't you tell our listeners who may not be familiar with it, what's the story all about?
It is a story about redemption. There's this guy, and he's an ex-boxer, kind of a grifter, and just an overall bad guy. He's like, he's burned every bridge, every kindness somebody's done for him, he's taken advantage of it, or he's just a selfish guy. So he's at the end of his ropes, and he made a little deal with himself that he's kind of running out of money. So in order to, you know, occasionally, you know, save on your food bills, he'd go to a diner and say, "Oh, I left," you know, he'll leave his keys at the counter and say, "Oh, I got a phone call. I'm gonna take this phone call." And they'll go, "Oh, he's fine. His keys are here. He's not going anywhere." You know, and then he just had a glove box full of keys. So he made a deal with himself. It's like when the glove box is empty, you know, I've run out of luck. And he's very luck oriented. So very superstitious guy who's from Vegas, which is not a good town to be superstitious in, you know. And he's run out of Vegas. He decides that's the end of his rope. And then, but because he's superstitious, he's about ready to kill himself. He gets a text message. Now, it could have been like an airplane flying ahead, or a bird could have defecated on his shoulder. Right. He goes, "It's a sign. I'm meant to stay alive." You know,
right.
He uses that and says he's on a mission. He's going to help out an old friend in Las Vegas. And that's where the story kind of begins.
Now, I don't know about you, but personally, I feel like I know several Stanley dads. Just the kind of people that just everything seems to fall their way,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And they ruin it every single time.
Right. Yeah. And so where did you draw the inspiration from that? Did you know several people?
Oh, so many people growing up. I mean, I grew up a little bit in Cleveland, Ohio, but for the most part, like my formative years, like in high school, I was in Florida, and I was in Brevard County. And I don't know if you've ever seen Cops.
Yep.
But I think the most episodes filmed anywhere is in Brevard County, because every stupid thing somebody can do is in Florida. Like if you go, you know, "Oh, that, what kind of crime is that? That's the dumbest crime in the world."
Like Florida.
And then if you narrow it down, Brevard County specifically, it's like a home of imbeciles. So I knew a lot of imbeciles and a lot of happy-go-lucky, but they're fun. Those are the fun people to hang out with. You know, it's always interesting. There's always some kind of hard luck story, and you kind of fall for it a little bit, even though you know better. And you're like, "Oh, this person's going to screw me over."
Yeah, and you have to think, like, they get away with it up to a certain point, right? And you're just like, how did they possibly even,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was always so many little scams. I don't want to indict myself, but I was involved in so many little dumb endeavors, we'll call them. In retrospect, I'm like, that was your big...
What was I thinking?
That was the big... What do they call that? A spree? That was my...
Right,
my,
yep. Now, you mentioned yourself, it's a story of redemption, and I say here, this is really a story of redemption, but what was it about this story that made you feel like this is the story that I really need to tell?
I like the idea of this is an old guy, or not that old, I think he's 52 or 53 in the story, and I love Las Vegas, and I spent a lot of time there, it's particularly downtown Vegas, which is a whole different seedier side. But Vegas has really, in the last like 10 years, or even 15 years, really dramatically changed. Mm-hmm. So there's a big dichotomy between old Vegas and new Vegas. And this guy kind of represents old Vegas, even though he's not, you know, from the Sinatra era.
Right.
There's that feel in this book that it's kind of a 70s vibe.
Yeah, 70s Vegas, yeah.
When in reality, if you were to chronologically use this guy's age, it wouldn't be the 70s. It might be the like late 80s, I guess. But same type of different feel. And now he's coming back and everything's changed. And I think it's a story about adaptation and it just called to me. I love those type of characters. I love Vegas. And I'm not too into sports, but I do love boxing and MMA. So like, it's one of those cliche things where somebody says, oh, the story writes itself. But I really felt that way. I really felt that I was just kind of, you know, writing it all down, well, like Stanley Dance.
Well, it's interesting that you say that the story wrote itself, right? Because here's the thing, like it's the path to redemption, and Stanley Dance is the hero, and it's like he's got this plan, you know, he's kind of a con man.
So you never quite hear the plan, though. That's kind of right? Key. Yeah, he never really lays it out fully.
No, he doesn't. And you wonder if he really knows what he's doing.
Yeah, his plan is so simplistic and so terrible, honestly. That's the beauty of it. Like, I just love that. Like, everyone just like, well, Stanley really seems to believe it this time. I believe him again. And maybe it's just because they haven't been around him in a long time. They're like, oh, well, he sounds like he's changed. I mean, you know, he's doing all the right things.
But in a way, there's that saying about in the military, like your plan of attack only exists until first contact, right? Until first engagement.
Yeah, everything messes
and then
up.
Right, and that's the thing about Stanley's plan, right? His path to redemption is messy, but in a way, life is messy.
Yeah.
So that's part of the journey as well, right?
Yeah, totally. It's a very messy thing. It's very clumsy, just like he is. And, you know, you'll hear everybody else in the story calling him out on it a little bit, particularly Betsy, the woman he's there to supposedly save.
Right.
And even she's just feeling kind of desperate, maybe checking up on him. She's in kind of a spot, and she's like, I could really use a hand here. My daughter's getting out of control, and this rival of Stanley who kicked him out is trying to shut me down by taking Betsy's daughter, who's the big star of this burlesque show that's bringing out so much business to her small-time casino, mm-hmm. and he wants to bring it to his bigger-time casino. It's not like his casino is the Cosmopolitan,
right.
or the MGM. It's another bigger casino downtown.
Now, you mentioned Betsy, you mentioned the daughter, you mentioned Les, but Stanley's son is also a character in the book. So it's mothers and daughters, and it's fathers and sons. And that's really another area where Stanley really needs to redeem himself,
yeah,
right?
Like I think
his relationship with his son is not...
It's just awful. I mean, he really doesn't have a relationship with it at all. But part of his plan for redemption is to repair his relationship with his son. And I said it in, I think, another interview. It's like Stanley Dance has no experience at being a good guy or doing the right thing. So, of course, he's very ham-fisted in his approach to being a parent or a father or even a friend to anybody. His nature is still kind of to take advantage and live off the kindness of others. He's Blanche DuBois in his own way.
There you go. Where did you draw that inspiration? It seems like you have a good relationship with your father.
My relationship with my father was interesting because he really good with young kids, and he was a great, very funny, charismatic guy, great sense of humor. He's not very good with a teenager and somebody who had a mind of their own.
Right.
And I grew up hearing about my father's exploits. He was an ex-pro boxer. Not a very, you know, he wasn't like a celebrated boxer. He was an average boxer. And so I would hear these things growing up, and I was like, I want to be just like my dad. He wants to be a comic book artist. I'm going to be a comic book artist. My dad used to be a fighter. Well, I'm going to get into all sorts of mischief. And so that we kind of butted heads in our teenage years. And I would say, I mean, I could cherry pick a few stories, and you go, oh my God, he's the worst dad in the world. How could he ever do that or, you know, say that? But there's also great moments too. It's like, you know, there's two sides to every story.
It's life.
Whoa, that's accentuates the point right there. End of the interview. Done. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I'm old enough now, and even when I was furious with him, you know, it's like, that's still my dad. You know?
Now, you've done most of your previous work as an illustrator.
Yeah, I did. When I got into comic books, I was primarily inking at Marvel. I always wanted a pencil, and they would, just out of the kindness of an editor's heart, go, this guy begging us to pencil something, we'll throw him something. And then I went to Image, and Rob was like, do you want to draw Prophet? And I'm like, yeah. I got into comic books, so I wanted, you know, I want to do what I'm doing with slots. I want to pencil and ink and write my own work. So he let me do that, and that kind of got me started. And then the comic book business changed quite a bit in the mid-90s, and my father passed away. And now looking back, I understand why I made the move to advertising. Because the reason I was doing comic books was to make my dad, is had something we could talk about and not argue about. Like, we could talk about comic books and we could talk about boxing. And when that was over, I was like, you know, I tell my mom, like, hey, you know, I so-and-so, you know, Klaus Janson said this. And she, no context whatsoever.
Yep.
But, so I did advertising for a while, and not to knock anybody doing advertising, but I call it drawing refrigerators. Nobody starts drawing because they want to draw refrigerators.
Right.
Yep. When you're doing storyboards or doing any sort of advertising or commercial work, you're really just drawing sometimes most incredibly boring stuff, and it's a job. It's not your passion to draw like a Toyota Camry, you know, or a refrigerator. You know, from beautiful angles, although you have to learn to be good at that. So finally I got married, and I was like, I think I want to do comic books again, and I'm going to take a big pay cut, but, you know, I don't have too many other
skills.
But
life's too short, and
I don't have too many other skills besides the comic book world.
You know? So you decide, not only am I going to go back to comics, I'm going to tell the story that I want to tell.
Right. I did a lot of work for Marvel and DC, and I was taking any cover work I can get, provided I could pencil and ink it. And if I was doing the covers, I would also color it. So that helped me, and then it gave me enough confidence. Actually, the storyboarding gave me the confidence to pencil, because if anyone listening to this is familiar with my early work, like Prophet or anything, they'll go, you know, they'll shake their head a little bit. But I was forced to learn how to draw doing storyboarding, you know.
Now, when you got a chance to tell your own story, you got a chance to do slots, is it a really different headspace from a storytelling perspective, from like planning out the story, like the storytelling part of it, versus storytelling sequentially?
Certainly, yeah. And I wrote the whole thing Marvel style, meaning I plotted it out, and if there's key dialogue, that dialogue's in there, but I waited to script it until after I was finished. After I was finished with the page, I know exactly what's going to be on there, pretty much word for word. But, you know, you're establishing the beat work, and I was very inspired by shows like Better Call Saul and that sort of shifty sort of storytelling. As much as I like superheroes and I love Conan and fantasy, I also like that gritty crime noir stuff.
Well, I have to say, I've been reading comics for 40 years. For a first time work, it blew me away. It was so polished.
Thanks.
I didn't necessarily, not to disparage, but I just, you know, somebody's first time work, you usually can spot the cracks.
Writing wise, I do a lot of commercial writing. I still do corporate comic books, but it's always, here's our character, here's our company, here's what we want to promote. And so it's not, you know, nowhere near the same thing as writing a drama or a crime story or even a regular issue of any comic book.
Right.
You know, My Little Pony, for that matter.
So how's the reception been? Have you been hearing a lot of good things?
This made my day, and I'm only going to repeat this because it just literally happened to me. I was doing a commission at this show, this Phoenix convention of Daredevil, and Klaus Janson, who's in our group, I rarely ever talk to him, came up behind me, and he goes, who is that, Batman? He's just messing around with me. And he's telling me that he read slots and he really, really liked it. And that, to me,
man, this guy's a legend.
He's a legend. I mean, I had subscriptions to Daredevil when he was, you know, when he was doing finishes over Frank, and then when Frank left, he was just drawing it exclusively. Yeah. And I had subscriptions to his Punisher, his early Punisher work. So I'm such a fan of him to hear he enjoyed it and kept up with it. It was good. And my editors say they hear good things. I got nice, very nice reviews, which made my day. I was really thrilled that people liked it because it's, you know, it's not capes. There's no,
right.
There's no zombies. There's no superheroes. There's only one gunfire. There's only one bullet shot in the whole thing. So it's not like it's riddled with, it's not the Matrix.
Right.
You know?
Well, despite Klaus Janson's ringing endorsement.
That's all you need, by the way, in life.
And you can retire now and go out on top.
Yeah. Oh, maybe I will. That's a good idea.
But future projects? I mean, you want to do more writing and more stories to tell?
That's all I want to do. I mean, I'm certainly happy. Doing this opened a lot of doors, and I'm doing some projects right now at DC and another one, upcoming Marvel project, which I've been forbidden to discuss.
Fair enough.
But after that, I have another book, hopefully with Skybound. They're reviewing another project of mine, and it's a fantasy story. So it's very old school, like heavy metal. I don't know if you were into Heavy Metal magazine.
Oh yeah.
Heavy Metal for me was an interesting magazine because it was a departure from comic books and superhero comic books in particular.
Well, do you remember the movie? It was
Yeah. That was like, wow.
Right?
This is so insane.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even really know who Bernie Wrightson was.
Yep.
I was like, oh, I think he did Swamp Thing, and I wasn't super familiar. I didn't have the book A Look Back when that movie came out, though it probably was published. Yeah, it was published a little after that came out.
Yeah.
But so this is very heavy metal inspired, very Mobius. In fact, there's a lot of crystals in this book. So it's a big jump from Slots. Not as much dialogue. And I do like snappy patter in a comic.
Right.
So this will be a weird book if it goes through.
Well, any other current projects you want to share with our listeners? Anything else you want them to be on the lookout for?
I'm doing an issue of Batgirl, and Marguerite Bennett is writing it. It's issue 25, and there's a special Batman tie-in, so I get to draw Batman in this, which I've never done. I've done covers,
wow,
but I've never done any sequential work, so it's kind of exciting. And then keep a lookout for a secret project from Marvel.
Awesome. So, if any of our listeners want to follow along social media, so they know when that happens, where's the best place?
Urban Barbarian is my Twitter handle and also the Instagram handle. But if you search Dan Panosian, that'll come up too. But so Urban Barbarian on DeviantArt, on Twitter, I have a blog. That'll get you your fix.
Great. And listeners, I'll put those links in the show notes to all of Dan's social media. So if you want to follow him, know when the secret Marvel project is announced
yeah,
and when the Batgirl issue comes out. So again, Dan, it was great. I love Slots.
Thank you so much.
Great to have you on the show. Thanks for taking the time.
I'm glad you liked it. It really makes me.
I loved it.
Oh.
Don't sell yourself short. It was amazing.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
So good to hear.